It's time to turn to the WUKY Sports page with your host, Keith Elkins, revealing conversations and stories you thought you knew from prominent Kentucky sports figures. Now, here once again is Keith Elkins.
Elmore Smith is with us today. He was a first-round pick and third overall in the 1971 NBA draft. He played for 8 years in the NBA with the Buffalo Braves, the Los Angeles Lakers, the Milwaukee Bucks, and the Cleveland Cavaliers. He still holds the record for blocked shots in a single game with 17. And he led the league in blocked shots in 1974 and 75. In the 73-74 season, he blocked 393 shots, more than 100 better than the player in second place, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. But before all that, Elmore Smith was a star at Kentucky State University in Frankfort, where he played on two NAIA national championship teams in 70 and 71. Thoroughbreds won again in 72 for three in a row. It was a great run, of course, in a time when Kentucky State could have competed with and beaten many teams at the higher levels. He's a member of the Kentucky State Athletics Hall of Fame, the Georgia Hall of Fame, the Greater Cleveland Sports Hall of Fame, and the Small College Basketball Hall of Fame. Today he's based in Cleveland, and among his interests today is a barbecue sauce business, and we'll talk with him about that as well, and in addition to his basketball days. Elmore, thanks so much. It's good to have you with us.
Hey, it's my pleasure. I'm glad you asked.
Tell me about your early interest in basketball. I mean, you're 7 feet tall, but you weren't always the tall kid necessarily. That didn't happen, I don't think, until the high school years. But tell me about your early interest in the game.
Well, to be honest, I really didn't have an interest in the game as a kid. I had a lot of chores and things that I did after school to keep myself out of trouble. But one summer, I think my sophomore year and my junior year in high school, I grew from 5'11 to 6'6 and from 6'6 to 7 feet. And the principal came up to me one day at recess and said, "If you don't go out for the basketball team, I'm going to kick you off campus." So I did go home and got my grandfather took me to get me a pair of sneakers, and I came back to school the next day and stayed after school for practice. But it was very easy for them to recognize the fact that being tall doesn't mean you automatically know how to play basketball. Mm-hmm. So it was quite an experience, and some of my friends still talk about that went to school with me during that time. But my real development came when I went to Kentucky State College, playing with Travis Grant and William Graham and Mike Bernard and those guys who had played all their lives. They taught me a lot about the game of basketball and how to take my assignment seriously and give it my best shot. And just so happened we ended up being successful by my being able to develop.
Now, you played high school basketball in Georgia, right, where you grew up?
Yeah, Macon, Georgia, mm-hmm. Ballard Hudson High School.
Yeah. Now, you started at Wiley College in Texas and then transferred to Kentucky State. What did you think about the prospects of the team and your own prospects when you got to Frankfort and first met your teammates? And, of course, I assume you talked to Coach Lucius Missel by that time, but what did you think about the prospects of the team at that point?
Well, at that time, the team wasn't a winning team. I don't think they had won two or three games the years before I got there. But I always felt we had potential to do some things, because as I learned the game, it became pretty easy to me to learn my assignments and to try my best to develop them. You had a guy like Travis Grant who, I tell you, that guy was amazing. Many of the my professional teammates, they always talk about Travis. But I don't know. Coach Mitchell was a stickler for fundamentals. And he just took me under his wing. When I went to Wiley College, I went there because I had, at high school, I really didn't play. But because of not being clumsy or anything, I got three scholarships, one to Fort Valley State College in Georgia, one to Wiley College, and one to Kentucky State. I took the one to Wiley College because there were guys going to Wiley College that I didn't know, but they were from my hometown. I didn't know anybody at Kentucky State. But one day in practice at Wiley College, the head coach came up to me and said, "You know, you'll probably never play for me." I said, then why did you bring me here? He said, because I didn't want anyone else to get you.
Wow.
And so the one game that I played in, we won that game. And I went home for Christmas and didn't go back. And that's how I ended up going to Kentucky State. But, yeah, Kentucky State had some players that wanted to win, but we just didn't have the key players in place.
Now, I was going to – let me step back just a little bit and ask about your recruitment then. As you said, you were just still pretty new to basketball, so getting just the three scholarship offers from those schools, it wasn't like you were considering many, many offers. That's just the way the path was for you at that time, and that people might look back on your NBA career and think that you were a highly recruited player, but it just didn't develop that way, did it?
No, it didn't. As a matter of fact, I didn't hear from any other teams who had interest in me until I went out for the Olympic camp in 70. And I guess I performed well enough out there for other coaches to see if they could convince me to come to their schools and leave Kentucky State. But before then, I was unheard of.
You had some just incredible statistics at Kentucky State. Your first year, 15 points and just under 20 rebounds a game, and then just under 22 points and 23 rebounds a game, and then in your final year, 25 points and 24 rebounds a game, and that first year, 799 rebounds, the most in a season in college basketball at any level. I believe that's a record that still stands. Rebounding, I mean, being 7 feet tall certainly helps, but you had to develop some skills along the way. Was there anybody in particular that really helped you develop as a big player and help you take advantage of the physical attributes that you had?
Yes, each of my teammates. For instance, Solomon Davis was the starting center mm-hmm. when I got there, and he would take time to teach me how to position myself around the basket, especially going for rebounds, how to box out and how to hold my position and consistently go after the basketball with authority, and I continue that throughout my career. Each year we get together for a team reunion, and we reminisce about those things. And I always thank him for spending the time with me, teaching me how to do that. As far as shooting was concerned, I used to just watch Travis how he released the ball and how he some shots I just developed from watching other guys, but. As far as learning how to play as a big man, I really felt that I could play any position because I picked up pretty quick watching other guys dribble, pass, and shoot. And I used some of those things during the years that I played, both in college and in the NBA.
Mm-hmm. The name Travis Grant has already come up several times, and one of the pictures on your photo gallery at your restaurant's website is you with Coach Mitchell and your teammate Travis Grant. He was 6'7", 6'8", forward. He shot 64% from the field for 4 years, and this is like over 2,700 shots, and scored 4,045 points. That is still a college basketball record, and he did not make a whole lot of layups and dunks. He was a great outside shooter, and I wonder if you could describe just what kind of a shooter Travis Grant was.
Well, they labeled him the machine.
Yes.
And when he first came to Kentucky State, I heard one of my teammates ask him how many points did he average in high school, and I think he said 40. And they laughed and said, yeah, sure. But I tell you, 1 week of practice, everybody became believers. And that's one of the reasons why my rebounding average was so high. I love to rebound so that I could watch Travis shoot. Mm-hmm. I sat on a bench with an injured toe one game, and I watched Travis score 75 points.
Wow.
And I think he only shot 5 layups. He was unbelievable. When I played with the Lakers, Jerry West said he think Travis was the best pure shooter he had ever seen in his life. And there are a lot of great shooters out there, but I still haven't seen anyone yet that could match Travis Grant.
Well, as you mentioned, he was known as the machine for just that reason. I remember as a UK freshman, a group of friends and I went over to Frankfurt one night when your team was playing Tennessee State, one of your great rivals. And at the you were in NAIA at that time. And, of course, at that time, a lot of the major programs were, especially in the Southeast, were just beginning to integrate. So there were some great athletes at these smaller schools. And Kentucky State versus Tennessee State was really a national championship caliber matchup. They had Ted McLean and Leonard Truck Robinson, who went on to play a long time in the NBA. I don't know if you recall the particular game or not. I think this would have been in January of 71. But you had some great games against Tennessee State and teams like that, didn't you?
We enjoyed playing against Tennessee State and Central State and other schools. But, you know, you didn't mention one of the key players on that team, Lloyd Neal. He played center for Tennessee State. He was I think he was the foundation of that team. Yeah, Ted McLean. As a matter of fact, his cousin lives in Cleveland, Ohio, and I see him from time to time. Mm-hmm. And I talk about the skill set of Ted McLean was one of the reasons why I learned to block shots, because he would drive to the basket and make layups in different. I mean, he would put the ball behind my back. He would do whatever he needed to do to score. And the next day in practice, after playing against him the first time, I asked all my teammates to form a line and go in for a layup. And after that practice, nobody was able to make a layup on me, especially Ted McLean. I really embarrassed him the next time we played against him, because I was blocking a shot, throwing the ball back at him. And he said, "Man, you finally caught on."
Well, it's an indicator of some of the great competition that you faced in NAIA and in the early 1970s. Ted McLean, known as the Hound, I think was his nickname. Yeah. He was such a great defensive player. And, of course, he went on to play in the NBA and the ABA. You mentioned Central State and some of the other schools. Who were some of the other great athletes that you faced and maybe even saw again later in the NBA that you saw earlier in college at Kentucky State?
Well, I didn't see any of the players from Central State. Like I said, Lloyd Neal, he played with Portland throughout his career. Mm-hmm. And he was a consistent ball player. I played against Ted McLean when he was with Denver. And he was there with, I can't think of the coach's name, but he also played for the University of Kentucky, Dan Itzel.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm. And it was just amazing to me to be able to play against guys from college into the pros, because it just goes to show you we weren't just a mediocre group of guys that was playing ball. We played the kind of ball that people enjoyed watching us play, and we enjoyed playing. And in the NBA, I most of the guys that I played against, I sort of still stay in touch with. They call me from time to time. Clifford Ray, that played with Golden State, and Bob McAdoo, and Cornell Warner, and Bobby Dandridge. I constantly stay in touch with those guys, and we have over the years. And they're all doing well health-wise. Mm-hmm. I had quite an experience there at Kentucky State, one that I never forget, because every year for the past 12 or 13 years, we've had reunions. All the teammates get together and travel to whoever is the host at that time of year, whether they live in Florida, which is where we were supposed to have it this year, but because of that virus, we had to cancel. But we sort of stay in touch, and many of the guys that I played against in the NBA come to those reunions because they said, "You guys got to keep this going because people don't do this kind of stuff." Mm-hmm. But we enjoy it.
I was going to ask you, too, about the atmosphere at some of your games, because I was, as I mentioned, I attended that one against Tennessee State, and I'm sure there must have been others that you were facing rival teams, and the place was just packed and just on edge from start to finish as far as the fans just really being into the game. What was that like for you as a player to play in front of those crowds?
Well, you know, we were taught early, don't pay attention to the fans, because you lose your focus. But I remember this one game that Kentucky State played against Central State there in Frankfort, Kentucky. they brought a busload of students from Central State down, and when they got there, they found out that there were no tickets left. They had sold out all the tickets. But those fans from Central State got mad and tore the wall down and came into the gym.
It's hard not to pay attention to that.
We talk about that all the time. I have some friends here from Central State. But they actually broke out all the glass and came into the gym. They stopped the game, swept the glass up off the floor, and then we continued to play. Mm. But, yeah, that gym was too small for some of the competition that we had to compete against there in Bell's Gymnasium.
The NAIA basketball tournaments that you won, the national championship, looking back on the 71 tournament, you had a win over St. Thomas of Minnesota 100-66, and then a 14-point win over Central Washington, a 12-point win over Grambling, a 13-point win over Elizabeth City State, and then the championship game, a 20-point victory over Eastern Michigan. It sounds like Kentucky State was not only the best team, but the best team by a pretty good margin in that tournament.
Well, like I said, we had some talent on that team. And if you focused your attention on one player, we had others that could just jump right in and fill the void. But I'll never forget one game against us, Eastern Michigan. Travis and I were roommates. And Travis and I sat up one night and watched a movie that kind of affected both of us emotionally. And so Travis looked at me, he says, E, tomorrow night, if you get all the rebounds, I'll score all the points. So that night I got 29 rebounds and Travis scored 64.
Wow.
So we really had a great thing going back then.
Well, you were chosen in the first round, a third overall pick in 71, and then Travis Grant was a first-round choice in 72, the 13th overall pick, and another teammate, Sam Siebert, right, in 1972, second-round 19th overall pick. And what a tremendous run to have those high draft choices coming out of Kentucky State. But, again, another indicator of the level of talent that you had there at that time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Plus, we had a coach that worked on really developing your skills to a point where you knew your assignment and you did it well. When I was at Kentucky State, I had a reputation for blocking shots and things. So when we met Sam Siebert at Olympic tryouts, and he decided at that time that he was going to leave the school that he was attending and come to Kentucky State. Well, Sam had the same skill set as far as timing and rebounding and blocking shots. So he was able to fill that spot. And you don't need a lot of you didn't need a center to score a lot of points because, like I said, you had Travis. You could never imagine how many points Travis probably could have scored. I'll never forget one guy before a game, he made a joke about Travis. And Travis looked at me and winked his eye and scored 45 points. I said, I told you, leave him alone.
Yeah, 45 on his way to 4,000 for the career. So it was certainly a tremendous run at Kentucky State, and great to hear that you get together with those guys and have reunions, and just shows everyone enjoyed the experience as well as the success on the basketball floor.
It was a lot of fun. There was a guy that came in the year after I left. His name is Arthur Box. He's written a couple of books about our teams back then. And I tell you, he didn't miss very much. He's trying to decide if he want to put it on the market or what, but he sent me a copy a couple of weeks ago, and I think it sums up our whole history there at Kentucky State. And I'm glad we were able to stay healthy and be able to communicate with each other. One of our teammates suffered a stroke back in March, Bruce Hobson, but he's doing well. Other than that, everybody's healthy and hanging in there.
Mm-hmm. And give me the name of the teammate again, and is there a name for the book as yet?
There is a name for it, but let me give you his. His name is Arthur Box.
Right, okay.
And as a matter of fact, if you'd like, I can give you his, I can email you his contact information.
Okay, that'd be great.
And, and I think you would enjoy the book because when I was inducted into the Small College Basketball Hall of Fame, the president of the NCAA small college Hall of Fame, told me that he read the book, and he says that's amazing, some of the things that's in that book that we didn't know. Because there are players on that team that could have played professionally, like Jerry Stafford. Mm-hmm. But and he's from Cleveland. He passed away. It's been about 10 years now. And his teammate, I mean, his homeboy, Leon Harris, who also passed away. Both guys that passed away on our team were from Cleveland, Ohio. But, yeah, we miss them very much. But, yeah, we had a lot to reminisce about, and we still do when we get together.
Wanted to ask you, in the early years of your NBA career, I saw a photo of you going up against Wilt Chamberlain, and here you are, you know, a few years earlier, you were just beginning, really, your basketball career in high school, just learning the game, and now you find yourself going up against the greatest players in the world, and of course, Wilt Chamberlain was so well known from the time at Kansas on. He was the first real dominant seven-footer, I would say. There had been a few players of that height, but nobody dominated the game quite like Wilt. What was it like as a young player to go up against Wilt Chamberlain?
Well, keep in mind, I was never a sports fan, and people don't believe it, but I didn't know who Wilt Chamberlain was until
three or four months
before I played against him. One summer, Bill Russell came down and played against me at my school. He had a speaking engagement there at the school, and while he was there, he came in and played against me. And after that, after he walked off the court, I went over to my teammates. I said, "Hey, who was that?" They said, "You don't know who that is?" I said, "No." They said, "That's Bill Russell." And years later, following that, Bill used to laugh about that because, you know, he was a tremendous ball player, heck of a guy. I really enjoyed getting to know him. But Wilt was a heck of a guy, too. I had no idea that when I was traded to the Lakers that I was going to be replacing Wilt. I thought I was going to play with him mm-hmm. because my teammate Travis was already there. And he had been drafted by the Lakers. So I was looking forward to, you know, playing with Wilt and Travis and Jerry West and Gale. I think we would have had a championship team all over again, but, you know, you can't really anticipate what will happen. You just go and do your job the best you can.
Well, with the Lakers, October 28, 1973, you were playing for the Lakers at that time. And the opponent was the Portland Trail Blazers, and you blocked 17 shots in that game. And here we are 47 years later, and that's still the record for a single game. I know you've said in past interviews that they just kept coming at you in that game and didn't change the strategy. But tell me what you recall about that night.
Well, I just remember Keith Erickson coming up to me during the game. He said, "Boy, you're on a roll tonight, aren't you?" I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "You're not letting anybody score." I said, "Is that right?" See, in college, you learn not to focus on what you're doing. You just keep doing it to the best of your ability. That's why Travis never knew how many points he had scored during a game. Nobody keeps up with that stuff. You just go out and do your job. And during that night when I was blocking shots, all I knew was every time I blocked a shot, I saw Gale Goodrich scoring on the other end. Mm-hmm. So I guess for the most part, the guy shot that I was blocking was the guy that Gale Goodrich was supposed to be guarding. But anyway, it worked out good. Now, I don't remember a whole lot about the game other than what people told me after the game and said, "Man, you were really hot tonight as far as blocking shots." But, you know, that was what I did. My timing, I worked on it a lot. I didn't know I was working on it as a kid. I used to do things that helped me build my legs and which caused me to have pretty good leaping ability. And my timing, I had to always jump rope with my sister because my other brothers wouldn't. So I developed timing as a kid and, that's one of the things that kind of kept me out of trouble, and it was hard for guys to anticipate when they could drive to the basket and score. Some of my teammates, like Austin Carr, said he used to like setting guys up. He'd pretend they beat him and drove to the basket because he couldn't wait to see their eyes when they realized that I was there. And I said, you know, you never know what people – how people feel about you until they tell you. But it was just fun. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, that's a triple-double in that game, 12 points, 16 rebounds, and 17 blocks. So quite a contribution in that one. And Gil Goodrich, you mentioned he was getting to the other end of the floor a lot. He had 49 in that game, I think. And the Lakers won the game, of course, over Portland that night when you set the record with 17 block shots. Wanted to ask you about the trade in June of 75. You went from the Lakers along with Junior Bridgman, the former University of Louisville star, and Dave Myers and Brian Winters to Milwaukee for Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Walt Wesley. And, of course, by that time, Kareem was established as one of the superstars of the game. What do you recall about the circumstances of that trade, and how did you feel about going to Milwaukee at that time?
Well, I thought it was a really good move on the Lakers' part. As a matter of fact, the owner, Jack Ken Cook, and I became real good friends when I played for him. So before the news was out that the trade was taking place, he had his controller, Jim Locker, to call me and let me know what was going on in regards to the trade. And I thought it was a good move. I enjoyed going to Milwaukee playing with those young guys and guys that I was used to running with. Like with the Lakers, the guys were all injury prone. Like Jerry pulled his groin muscle when I was there, and Happy hurt himself. And then they brought Connie Hawkins. And it's just that when I went to Milwaukee, I felt like I was surrounded by guys that had the ability and the potential to make a run. And we did make the playoffs that year. But I think that the team that I really enjoyed playing with the most was the Cavaliers. Mm-hmm. And that's probably why we're still here in Cleveland. I still work with the Cavaliers, part of the Legends organization, and we do PR work for the Cavs. We haven't had a lot to do this year since March, but we still sort of stay in touch and stay involved with what's going on, as much as they will allow us to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned finishing up the career in Cleveland with those, I think it was three seasons there, and obviously you must have enjoyed the area to kind of establish yourself there after your career. I was going to ask you before we get, I want to talk to you about your barbecue business, but before we get to that, how you stayed involved with the game, or to what level you stayed involved with the game after your playing days were over. How did you manage that?
Well, it took a while for me to actually recover from my injuries. I had injuries that during the time that I received the injuries, the doctors had no idea what the problem was. They didn't see it. It took from 79 to 2008 for a doctor, when I was getting my knees replaced, that he found out I had a crack in the tibia that you could only see when I was in certain positions or put a certain force on that particular area. I hated the way my career ended, but, you know, things happen. I found out that happened to a lot of ball players. But I really developed some good relationships with the players here in Cleveland. As a matter of fact, Campy Russell and I and Jim Jones and Austin Carr, we do similar work. When Ted Stepien bought the team from Nick Mulledy, I was still out trying to recover, but in 2006, Dan Gilbert had heard that I was still living here in Cleveland. See, when I moved here, my kids were very small, and so they grew up and we all developed really close friendships with people here. We had friends throughout the country, but because the friendships that my kids were able to develop, we kind of made a decision to stay here instead of moving back to Buffalo, where my wife is from. But it didn't matter. We still get a lot of visitors from Buffalo, even here. But I was able to Dan Gilbert sent guys out looking for me to see if I wanted to get back involved with the Cavaliers. And ever since 06, I've been involved with them. I do public speaking for the Cavaliers. I do autograph signing. We go to games and coach different organizations and things. And because I guess the NBA expanded their territory, they have like a 150-mile radius. So I go up to like Buffalo, New York, and Rochester, New York, and Columbus, and various places where the Cavaliers are developing partnerships with the organization that's in those various locations. And we just have fun staying involved and going to the games, supporting the teams and talking to the players, trying to be encouraging to them. One of the players on the team is Kevin Love, and he considers himself my nephew because his father, Stan Love, played with me with the Lakers, and we became very good friends.
Okay.
And,
yeah, I was going to say the relationships you build, not only with teammates, but also, in a sense, with the fans over the years, because I'm sure at the speaking engagement, someone will come up to you and ask you about maybe the 17-block shot game or another game that they saw, and it's the fans have great memories. You have provided some great memories for them, and that would have to be pretty satisfying to get out and get to talk to them about that and hear their thoughts on it.
And I enjoy it, because when you're playing, you don't know how people view you. I mean, they're there. Sports is a way of relaxing, enjoying yourself. And if you're able to perform in that field, it's really a great feeling to know that you're giving people something that could take their minds off their troubles. But I stopped playing basketball in '79, and even to this day, I still get a lot of fan mail from all over the world. I get letters from China. I get mail from Germany. Mm-hmm. And it's just amazing to me how people can focus their attention. And the letters that they write when they're trying to get their cards autographed is very much appreciated, because they're not just saying they're fans. They put their true thoughts in it, let you know how their fathers viewed us when we played and stuff. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. You averaged a double-double for your career, 13 points and just under 11 rebounds for the entire career, and that is certainly a mark of consistency. And even though I know you said you didn't pay attention necessarily to the statistics as they happened, but to be able to look back on that record and see what a consistent model it was, that has to bring some satisfaction to you, doesn't it?
And it does, because, you know, you when you're playing, you don't go out there with the thought that you're going to score so many points a game or so many rebounds, or whatever. You go out there with the idea you do what you need to do in order for your team to win. And I was happy to, at times, be able to score. I know I could have scored a lot more had I been focused on that, but that wasn't my intention. My goal was to help protect the basket and help my teammates win as many games as we possibly could.
The fans at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse, where the Cavaliers play, can make a stop at Elmore Smith's Smokehouse Restaurant, which features his gourmet all-natural barbecue sauces. That's been an interesting second career in a way for you. Tell me about how that interest developed and why you decided to make it into a business.
That's still amazing to me, because when I played with the Lakers, my family and I used to entertain a lot. And my wife, most of our friends used to barbecue on the grills and things. And in L.A., the weather was nice most of the time. So my wife would ask me to cook on the grill, and I would make various sauces. But this one time I came upon a sauce that everybody liked. And my wife used to get mad at me if I deviated from that particular sauce. But over the years, after I left the Lakers, different people would call and ask me if I could send them sauce for different like reunions, family reunions, or church affairs and different things, and I would send it, you know, gallon-sized containers, but it got to be too expensive. So one day a person came up to me and said, man, you should market that sauce. If you put it in the store, we'd buy it. So I found a manufacturer out of Pennsylvania that was able to help me get my patent and everything put together. And I tell you, somehow Whole Foods found out that I was making sauce, and they invited me to come in and meet with them, and they told me they really loved my sauce, but they asked me if I could make it, if I could take out the high fructose corn syrup, and I said, yeah. And so ever since we've done that, I've had my products in Whole Foods, and now I'm in Giant Eagles and looking forward to a lot of other stores. It's just been something that I never expected to happen, but it's well appreciated.
Sounds like you're having some fun with it, too. It's something you enjoy doing, right?
Oh, yeah. It is a lot of fun. I enjoy when people – I get emails from people. That, like, since this pandemic's been going on, I get emails from people that say, we enjoy getting your sauce and stuff at the arena, but where can we get it now? Mm-hmm. So we're looking into opening a restaurant in another city, in Canton, probably. Canton, Ohio.
Well, you can find out more at ElmoreSmithBBQSauce.com. A lot of information there on an exciting and successful business that Elmore Smith is involved with now, following his basketball days. And, of course, is still involved with basketball with the Cavaliers as well. Elmore, it's been a pleasure to talk with you about this great era of basketball. Thanks so much for sharing your memories of Kentucky State and that wonderful time in Kentucky State basketball history, as well as your NBA career. Thanks for being on with us today.
Hey, thanks for asking, Keith, and you have an enjoyable day. Stay safe.
All right. Thank you. You too.
You've been listening to The Sports Page with Keith Elkins, an exclusive podcast from 91.3 WUKY, produced by Alan Lytle. Our theme music is Peanut Butter and Jam by Illogical Bit, available at soundcloud.com/illogicalbit. Subscribe to The Sports Page through Google Play or at our website, wuky.org.